Welcome back to The Barbell Strikes Back. I'm your host, James McDermott, and today I have another amazing guest. Everyone, this is Danny Casey. Danny is the owner and head coach at the New York Weightlifting Academy. He's a USAW national level coach and a pretty badass weightlifter as well.
Thank
and
you,
we're going to talk. We're going to talk all about that. I'm trying to hype you up here, Danny.
I appreciate it. I need that. I
got to
get people motivated.
And what's pretty cool is that you are the first person to do this, by the way.
Oh, cool.
You are coming live from your gym.
So I
had a couple guests on already, but you are the in true weightlifter spirit. You are doing the podcast in a weightlifting gym. That's pretty badass.
Well, I got to deliver. I mean, it is a reputation to hold up here, so I got to keep everything surrounding that.
What better place to do it? And I was thinking about this when you called me, and I'm like, man, I should be doing the podcast from my gym. You know, it's like, what other place do you feel most comfortable, most at home than in your gym? I almost feel
especially
more at home at the gym than my home.
Yeah, it's. I try to separate the two and leave a lot of really take nothing. I mean, I don't have anything at home like that's even related. There may be one or two things. Well, not even. I mean, aside like maybe a pair of shoes or so. I don't really. You wouldn't think that I was related to weightlifting in any which way at home. So
really, there's no like medals adorning the wall and trophies and
no, nothing. All of that I leave at the gym. So everything's isolated within that environment and keep it in this environment rather, and just kind of keep the two a little bit separated, differentiated. So I think I think it's good to do that. So that way you keep each space particular and allow that for different aspects of your personality.
You know, that's probably a really good idea. I'm the complete opposite. Like my wall behind me is covered in weightlifting
I mean, I was
posters.
Checking those out. They look awesome. The Montreal one.
Montreal. Cool. We got Gatsby up there. Masters,
oh, wow. Okay.
Nationals.
That's
we got
nice.
Barcelona. Mm-hmm. So it's like, and there's stuff all over the place, but it's like.
Stuff like that's cool. That's like, that's memorabilia. That's a lot more than just, I mean, I do have a bunch of stuff hanging here, but yeah, none of that at home, but it's still, I like that stuff.
Yeah, there's not a barbell in your living room right now, you know.
Negative. There's definitely
okay.
Not.
that's a good thing.
Yeah,
so
I
Danny, let's talk about you. How did you, you've been in the sport for quite some time. Mm-hmm. How did you get into weightlifting? And take me through those early years on just your experiences getting into the sport. Who are your mentors and coaches? Mm-hmm. And where did you climb within the ranks kind of before you got into coaching? Or maybe coaching happened hand in hand.
Yeah, it was kind of everything happened simultaneously in terms of, let's say, coaching and competing. But going back to how I got into it, originally, I mean, in high school, I was weight trained and such, playing football, and then go like football weight room. And then friends and I would always just continue in the gym and just like do bodybuilding stuff. So I always did that in the various sports. Like I raced motocross when I was younger and would try to train and apply for that. And then eventually got into doing like wrestling and jiu-jitsu. And at some point, I really don't know how, how it dawned to it, but came to a point where it's like, I was like, you know, the Olympic lifts, I think would, I don't remember even what experienced or exposed me to them, but like, that'd probably help make me a better wrestler. So yeah, it should, you know, technique's a big thing. I should probably learn how to do these. Maybe I'll seek out a coach. So it just somewhere an interest came along. And then essentially, long story short, asked a couple people if they had any ideas. And the way I ended up working out was I ended up getting introduced to this one person who was actually good friends with my uncle from decades prior. And he worked with me for a while, probably about a year. Ended up competing. And then I met a good friend of mine at a competition. And unbeknownst to them at the time, he wasn't a good friend of mine, but we just started talking and everything, invited me to come train with them. And then it turned out that he was training with Mark, and it was Mark that he introduced me to. And then I've been with him ever since, really. And that was probably going on, like, I don't know, maybe probably 10 years now.
And that's Mark Chasnov?
Yeah,
Did
Mark
Chasnov.
Did I say
his last name correctly?
Yep, correct. So, Mark Chasnov, senior international coach.
Yeah, so, like, for people who don't know, you know, I mean, I didn't know Mark until I visited your gym
yeah.
one time for a seminar. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about Mark's background and kind of his impact on you.
Oh, geez, Mark's background goes forever. Well,
yeah,
his
cliff
father
notes.
I'm sorry?
The cliff notes, maybe.
I'll give the abridged version. Well, his father was a lifter. They're from Long Island originally. Father was a lifter, and then Mark got into lifting, and he started training way back when he was younger at Lost Battalion. And I guess in the time, he just met a bunch of great lifters throughout, like Dave Shepard. He's a very well-known lifter. Mark always says that Dave Shepard taught him how to do the jerk. And Mark just is involved forever, competed for years upon years, ended up getting into coaching later on, coached one of the first female national champions in the country. Ended up later on coaching also Konstantin Starkovich to the Olympics in 96. And as, along with that, he's also a physical therapist. So it was kind of interesting. And the professional science background that he had relative to the weightlifting background applies the two together. So his perspective's pretty, I guess, different in certain regards and unique. And once I started training with him, I was like, all right, this guy knows what he's doing. So I've been with him ever since, and I mean, it's been great. I mean, no complaints. Weightlifting's hard, and it's what I've learned from him is obviously a tremendous amount is what I've learned from him, and it's just I don't know, like try to quantify so much information in a couple of short sentences. But at least the experience that he gave it, it's a very traditionalist type of aspect with his own approach to it, and just it's like I tell people all the time, and like I've wrote a blog about and such too. It's like best way to compare it is like weightlifting is like a martial art. You seek those who are masters in the discipline, and like anything else, you have to follow a step process and slowly work your way up and build the experience and learn from someone who's been a master and has that experience in order for you to be able to really take a lot away from it and be able to progress. And like with him, he's at the top of the level. He's been doing it for like well over 50 years, if not longer. So the experience goes a long way. So I'm lucky to be able to have that, especially so close. I mean, where he lives and where we train and where I've lived and live now, even it's just, I mean, real close proximity to each other. So there are not many senior international coaches in the country. So again, being such close proximity is pretty good.
Yeah, that's amazing to have him as a mentor, you know, for all these years. And also to have him, I imagine, coming into the gym and watching your lifters and either giving them feedback or giving you feedback to give them has got to be invaluable.
Oh, absolutely. And that is just, you learn in so many different ways. You learn from what he tells other people, even me just watching. Like, yeah, still always learning more. So that what feedback he gives me, recommendations for my training, recommendations for their training and such, it's a pool of knowledge is very deep. So utilizing it there's so much to utilize. And I try to continue to apply that to everyone that I work with and utilize that to make them better.
Yeah, like how have you shaped your own coaching approach based off of him? Like, do you coach the lifts the same way he does, or have you kind of branched off? You know, like what's similar, what's different?
Well, there are a lot. I guess certain fundamental premises are the same in terms of, like, let's say, fundamental really, in terms of flexibility, stretches, and a lot of like the therapy type stuff that he recommends. Also, too, in terms of training programs, it also goes back to like the earlier American philosophy of training of like Tommy Kono, a big advocate of Tommy Kono, and he would always say just, you don't need to train a lot, just not quantity training, quality training. And then Mark is big on that, only training 3 days a week, doing all the exercises relative of importance and spending more time on recovery. And almost as Tommy Kona would say too, just under training. So that way you'll always be capable of doing more if you're under trained than if you're overtrained, and the likelihood of injury is going to be greatly diminished. So that's a big consideration that he taught me and makes a lot of sense. And even just like the more experience I get now, it's almost like training more doesn't seem to really help more. And sometimes it even seems training less or taking a long break and coming back, it seemed to be even better. So.
Yeah. I know the more I've been learning and the more people I talk to, it seems like that 3 days a week is a number that everyone keeps coming back to. Mm-hmm. And it kind of seems though that like weightlifters these days, it's not enough. You know, it's you want more, you want to be going 7 days a week or 6 days a week. And it's like, I don't know where do you think the American mindset lost that approach where more is more instead of less is more?
Well, I think, it's funny because I actually went through this portion the other day in the book. I recommend, the only book I recommend to people is Tommy Kono's Weightlifting Olympic Style. And there was a portion in there where he discusses that and saying how the trend shifted when a lot of the Soviet and Eastern European countries adopted like a 5-6 day training approach. But then again, you could also, the argument that they can handle that because of one being state sponsored, but two, obviously illicit drug use is a major component of it. So if you're able to recover quicker, you could train more frequently. But that's something that I think in this country, we don't have, is the amount of drug use relative to these other countries. And I think that once people started seeing that, they really, let's say, maybe equated to drugs, or maybe at the time more drug use was prevalent in this country, that they could get away in doing more training days. But as let's say, a natural lifter, less is more.
Yeah, and it's like you see the professionals on TV, you see them lifting a certain way, and then you watch their training hall videos and everything mm-hmm. that they're doing, but you don't understand the why behind all of it. But you want it, but you try to emulate it, and then it doesn't work, and you get injuries or you get burnt out because it's not sustainable for the average Joe.
Very much, and that's I don't know if you experience it, if you have any, like, let's say, high school or college athletes that you may work with, but I'll see that all the time with, let's say, a lot of high school athletes, where they'll come in and be like, "Well, I'm doing this training program because it's what the strength coach for Louisiana State does," or let's say, "This is the New York Giants training program." It's like, well, there's a lot to be considered right there, because you're, let's say, only, you're 16 years old trying to do the program of someone who's been in developing up to this point for a long period of time. So there's a lot of different parameters to it. The physiological adaptation is over a course of a long period. Like, I don't know if there was one interview that Piers Dimas did, where he basically said it took him about 4 years to finally adapt to training in the Bulgarian style, which was later on in his career. So is you can't just dive right in and try to emulate right away. That's where it comes to having a good coach and having someone guide you, knowing what they're doing, to be able to gradually build you up to where you need to be, as opposed to just trying to go blind.
Yeah, I do remember when he said that, and that was like a big thing for me, because I had just assumed that he was Bulgarian style training all along, mm-hmm. and not until many years later he finally adapted to it.
Yeah,
and I don't have any like high school athletes, but I have CrossFitters.
Yes,
who are always like, they do a lot, so they expect to do a lot. And, you know, I'll get some of my younger guys, they're like, "Hey, I'm doing this extra front squat program that I found from XYZ female lifter on the internet." And I'm like, "All right, I'm not as pretty as she is, but so it's like I'm trying to battle that, but it's like, you don't need that extra. What you need is to put the effort into this little bit that we're doing and do it right and do it well, and then rest and recover. And eat food. Yeah.
And that's, I had a couple people where they just like wanted to do, I want to do more days. Let's look back up a little bit, training like five, wanting to train 6 days a week and just like working very hard. Yes. But then after that, it get to the point where it's like, well, why am I not getting better? I want to get better. Why are my numbers not going up? I was like, well, you train too much. Train less, take days off. I'm like, oh no, I don't want to do that. Well, don't expect to get better, because you're burning more energy than you have to give out. And you could see you come in, you start getting tired. Then reluctantly, eventually they started training fewer days. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, my lifting looks better. My numbers are going up. I feel better. It's like, oh, maybe there's something to this. It's like, well, yeah. Do the right amount. It's, like my buddy Joel Quintong said, he's don't train as much as possible, train as much as needed.
I like that. That's a great quote right there.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the end goal is not to just beat yourself to death in the training hall. The goal is to improve your numbers in training and on the platform. So it doesn't matter if you do, let's say, like total volume of 300 sets or 30. You got to go with what gets you the results. And I mean, results are the marker, not walking out of the gym feeling like you were hit by a truck. That's not a marker of success.
Yeah. And then it's, if you're doing it every day, like, how are you supposed to do it well the next day and then the next day and the next day? And I know people that I've worked with, you know, and again, this is coming from a CrossFit pool of athletes, they get addicted to exercising. Like they get addicted to that feeling of coming in and doing it every day and either getting beaten down. And then when they transfer to weightlifting, just either the feeling of lifting heavy or like getting their butt kicked in a tough session. And it's to get them to take a day off and not do anything.
Yeah.
It's almost as hard, Danny, as getting them to sign up for a weightlifting meet.
Oh, I'm sure.
I don't know which one is harder.
Yeah.
But they're both a challenge for me as a coach.
Yeah, that's tough. I remember like when I was younger, I mean, I always wanted to just want to train, like you had more energy and you were fired up and you want to do like, I want to get better. I want to do it. But then like as I've matured now with training and everything, it's like, I don't want to train. I don't want to spend more time doing this. Like people would be shocked. I only train 3 days a week. I'm like, I don't want to train 4 days a week. In fact,
I want to go outside.
Yeah, well, I just want to sit in my living room, stare at the wall. I don't want to do anything else extra right now.
Yeah. So when you were training in your early years, were you a junior or a youth athlete?
Negative. I started as an old person. When I really started training and first competing, I was probably like 26. So.
Okay. Yeah, a lot of people can. Yeah. I can relate with that. That's about as old as I was when I first started.
And coming into it, just had many like injuries from back when I raced motocross. My shoulders and elbows are all beat up. So as an unfortunate consequence of doing all that stuff, which was great, it created physical limitations that I have now for when I'm trying to do things that need no physical limitations. So let's say like lockout flexibility, that's something I've had to work a lot on to compensate. And that's been my hardest part with weightlifting.
Yeah, that's a tough part for a lot of people getting into it. Mark is big on that. What kind of things does he have you do to improve that aspect of your lifting that maybe a listener could be like, oh, that's something that's not in my tool bag right now?
Like what I'll tell people too is you're better off spending, if let's say you have an hour to train and you have a lot of issues, you're better off spending 40 minutes warming up and stretching and 20 minutes doing what you actually have to do than doing a 10-minute warm up and 50 minutes of, let's say, program training. Because if your body's not prepared to be able to do what it has to do, and obviously like really one of the biggest precedents of weightlifting is that it makes it such a, let's say, superior physical sport to everything else aside the mental component, is that physically it demands you move in ways with strength that no other sport subjects you to. And you need flexibility in absolutely every aspect. And if you can't achieve that flexibility, it's going to be very difficult for you to achieve the necessary positions to then have proper technique and be able to continually and repetitiously perform successful attempts. So the more time you spend getting your body prepared for what it's going to do, so then it can do it well, it goes back to like what I was saying earlier, better off doing doing a few things very well than just doing a lot mediocre, because it's the precision needed for lifting is the most important part. So really there's nothing novel. It's just that I spend a lot of time warming my shoulders up, a lot of time stretching them, stretching my elbows out, like the elbow joint, just like putting it over something and just giving myself an arm bar, and just areas that I have that are particularly tight. So it's just get it warm as possible. I dress very warm, even in the summer, like I'll wear multiple layers. So that's really it. Anything to keep me loose.
Yeah. Quality over quantity.
Always.
You know, it's better to have that 20 minutes be a hell of a 20 minutes, great lifting, than like sloppy minutes, 50 minutes of lifting, you know?
Oh yeah. That's exactly it. I mean, if you're staggering across the platform or you're staying in one spot, I mean, that makes a huge difference to the overall. I mean, just like going back to, I guess, kind of, you could, collected as a theme of what we're saying is that everything is cumulative over time. So training a lot, multiples, like 5 days a week, like you were saying with the CrossFit athletes, stress accumulates. So what you do 1 week carries into the next, which carries into the next month, which carries into everything. And that's same for how you approach the quality of your training too. If you have, and you see a lot of people who don't have coaches or just kind of do whatever, constantly bad lift. I mean, not to poke fun at some people, not no one in particular or anything, but just it's like if you have don't have the guidance or not abridging your training in a proper manner, you continue to compound bad habits, and that just in the long run subjects you to greater injuries, subject likelihood of greater injuries, likelihood of burning out, like you were saying. So it's you got to take everything in the short term so that way you have a better long term.
Yeah, I think the part of the issue is no one thinks about the long term. They only think about right now and what you want right now. But you have these goals 6 months down the road, and that's what you really want. So everything you do right now needs to be supplemental for that day instead of just the instant gratification of, well, I want to go heavy today or I want to go again tomorrow.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I totally agree with you on that. And that's, I don't know if that's just a societal thing or just the nature of the type of very particular people like us that enjoy doing this type of sport, because obviously we're a little eccentric as is to be involved in this stuff. But yeah, it's just, you have to have the patience, and that's, and again, now the more I'm doing, or I mean, the more years involved, and I'm beginning to grasp that a little bit better. So now in my training, I kind of met out what I do a little bit better instead of being like, oh, I can make that better. I can do it again. And just pounding away nonstop. And now I'm like, all right, I did this. That's enough for today. I'll be able to do more this following week, or have a little bit longer view into what my future training is going to be as a result.
Yeah. Wisdom comes, you know, with time in the sport, we would hope.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
We would hope. And you said something that I think a lot of people don't think about either when you were just going over the general things that you do. You know, everyone stretches the shoulder, but no one touches the elbow.
Yeah.
And it's in the middle of the shoulder and the wrist. So it's just like, I know I heard many years back at a seminar of Kelly Starrett, you know, you got the hip and the ankle, and the knee is just like the middle child who just takes all the beating for all of what the other siblings are doing. Mm-hmm. And like that just made a light bulb go off in my head. Like, I don't have, we should pay more attention to this elbow. Probably it's the thing that's locking out. It's not locking out. It's wobbly. It's unstable. What's going on here?
And that's, especially as you're seeing in weightlifting nowadays, is that judging has went from, if you watch videos from the 90s, let's say in America, watch videos of like national records, you'll see motion in the elbow. You see people come up and they'll get the lift as like, let's say a national record or so. Whereas by today's standards, the judges seem like they're just hunting for elbows. Even a shoulder motion, they'll construe as the elbow and say it was a press out, where it's just like, come on, you gotta favor the lifter a little bit. If you want to improve the sport, it doesn't mean be ruthless. It means, you know, encourage everybody to want to be able to participate. And that's one of the hardest things for me is that have the, let's say, the strength to do the lifts, but because of the lack of flexibility, they'll just, local judges are always very lenient, but let's say once you get nationally, they're just looking to kill you.
And yeah. Especially at those masters meets where it's like,
oh yeah,
really? Like, come on, we're 60 here. We're 70. What are you doing? What do you want?
I think that's the funniest thing I'm doing at Masters. It's like, listen, everyone who's competing in Masters has a job for the most part, has a job, has a family, they have responsibilities. This is, it's at that point, it is the ultimate of hobbies. It's not going to get anyone to a high level, sponsors, Olympics, anything like that. So, I mean, everyone is there just out of their sheer good grace for fun and love of the sport. Why are you going to kill them and hound them on their elbow? I mean, that's just going to be incline someone. Well, let's say I could do the lifts, but no matter what, my elbows are going to move. Why am I going to bother to fly out to this place and pay entry to compete when they're just going to red light me on everything? And that's, especially in the masters divisions, just going to dissuade them from wanting to continue to compete. And you want to keep people in, especially masters, because they're so great to work with.
Yeah. And it's a terrifying thing too, when you've traveled, you know, when you flew across the country or across, you know, the ocean to another country, like in Barcelona, you know, that was my lifter, Kim. I believe you met her in Montreal for the World Championship last year.
Yes.
She went to Barcelona and they were turning down lifts that are normally good. Like in Gaspé in Canada at the Pan Ams, it was good, you know, and they turned it down. It was a jury overturned it. And the jury overturned it. And then she missed the second one because I think we were frazzled at that point. And then we came back and got it on a third. But it's like, what are you guys doing? Like with, there's two platforms going on at the same time. Yeah. You look over to the other platform and there's a very similar lift, maybe a little better, maybe a little worse. And that one passed. but ours is like the jury's overturned over here. And that's where I struggle with the opinion nature of judging and the sport, you know, where some people are like, no, I feel like that wasn't a good lift. And it's like, well, but was it or not? You know, I wish we could have like AI that could instantly tell. And it just makes a cold, unbiased decision you know, on whether it was or not.
Well, like during last year at state championships, when all the judges that I had for the most part, I mean, some of them, let's say were like asking, how should they judge? And I was like, you know, if biggest thing is if you're in doubt, favor the lifter. Because, I mean, ultimately, like, let's say the way I go about it too is if there's slight motion, but they have complete, you see, like, the lift is fierce and they have command of the lift, now I'm going to give it to them because they're in control of the whole thing. Even if there's a little bit of motion, they're in control of it. If you could, you could tell the ones where someone is and someone is not, because they're the ones where, let's say, someone's pressing out and wobbling all over the place, but they look like they're fighting to gain control, then okay, that's a press out. But if someone's commanding and there's a little motion, I'll straight up give it to them. And that's what you see at a lot of the Masters events. Like one of my lifters at Nationals last year, great clean and jerk, probably one of the best of his life. And just like, he didn't even have a press out. Maybe his elbows were just not in like a, I'll text you the video so you can see it, but it was a very good lift and they turned him down 2-1, where it's like, I can't even believe they turned that down. It's like, why would you do that? Especially when it's like, he's not even in contention for a medal and you're being that harsh. So there's a lot to be said about judging. And I remember there was a lot of fervor at the end of last year about that.
Yeah, they robbed him. What's your opinion? Like, do you think that weightlifting could ever get to a point, or would you be in favor of getting rid of judging, period? Like maybe one judge to say, okay, yep, you got it overhead, good. It stopped at the shoulder and you put it overhead and you brought your feet together, good lift. The strongest person is probably still going to win, I would imagine, because at some point, the better technique will prevail because you're just more efficient. Do you think that they should just get rid of the press out rule?
Yeah, I do. I'd say maybe change it and just kind of leave it to the judge's discretion. But
I agree. I would say get rid of it. And
yeah, because ultimately
that makes the sport less subjective.
Yes. I agree with that. And ultimately, let's say, like you just said, those with good technique are the ones who are going to prevail. For those, I mean, who are unfortunate or are lucky enough to have, like, really good elbow lockout, I can tell you from the experience of someone who does not, it is not fun to try to have to fight a weight that hard overhead and use your muscular effort as opposed to your physical flexibility to be able to keep the weight overhead. And, I mean, it's good technique is good technique, and you're going to lock out because it's easier to do it and you're going to be able to lift more weight. And even if there's a little motion or such, and that, you know, and also too, that just made a few things come to my mind is that, it'll ultimately be safer for the lifter. The amount of times you may have seen lifts, like what just popped in my head was, the one, I think, where was that? Malta? I think it was the one competition in Malta that they had relatively recently where Max Lang, he'd snatched and, it was a snatch or a clean jerk, one of them, and fighting really hard. Like you could see, he's fighting, struggling to keep the weight up. And I don't know if they were waiting for him to get his feet or what, but he nearly killed himself to try to make the attempt. And when you're being that strict, you're doing is subjecting the greater likelihood of hurting the lifter. You want to, I think, getting rid of the press out rule would be very good for that, because if they make the lift, they could come up with it, and then. Okay, they're in command of it. Good, put it down. Instead of trying to be so observantly strict to how the rule is going to be on it, and then again, like I said, nearly subjecting the lifter to injury.
Yeah, and at a meet like that, you have to have three different opinions and comprehensions of the rules, and also personal biases watching the lifter. Then behind them, you have a whole table of the same thing.
Yes,
and it's like
exactly.
It's like, and then it's like we could make it super simple and like, did it get overhead or not, you know, yes or no is kind of
if you look at go to meets in decades past, you'll see that type of judging. You'll see a little bit less scrutiny like there is today, and I think just go back to what you're doing then. Favor the lifter, get the lift up, and especially, I mean, dare I say it, but now in the drug-free world, with everything they're going through, people still want to see big weights lifted, so give people the chance to make big weights. Don't worry about making it so technically stringent when especially everyone in the top level is so technically proficient anyway and beautiful to watch. So yeah,
keep the sport fun. Give the people what they want. Let the lifters go out there and show how hard they worked, and the cream mm-hmm. will still rise to the crop. You know, like the person who is meant to win it, is going to win it. And it's probably not going to be the person who has the trashiest technique and they're just muscling it overhead and they're like dancing all around the platform. It's probably going to be the guy or lady that is smooth, you know, efficient, and maybe there's a little wobble here and there, but they're also like talented enough to make that work and not hurt them.
If anything, I think it'll make it more competitive. Because if you're going to be that less strict with it, you're now affording people more lifts that they may would have turned down. And I think that it's just tighten up the competition between people. And the tighter the competition, the more exact you have to be with your execution. So that way you can assure that you're going to make it.
Yeah. And that brings me or pops another question in my head. Sure. So let's say you have a lifter who's in that situation.
Okay.
A lift gets turned down and you've been in this situation. Lift gets turned down. That it should have been good, you know, like it, but you know, okay, they got turned down. One, what do you say to that athlete? And then two, are you going up or are you keeping the weight?
It's all individual. So let's say in times where I've had that happen, there was one time where it happened and without a hesitation, I was like, that's fine. You're going up and just move them up right away. Another time they don't make it and like, what happened? Why? I thought that was so good. Then you got to kind of, I get whatever need be in the moment to console or just rectify how their feelings are and then just have them repeat it. Or if they come off and they're like, that was dumb, go up. And they just completely have the confidence to say, we're going up, then kind of go from there. So situational and individual. Yeah.
I've done best case scenario when they come off and they're like, let's go up. Like they just know, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And then sometimes, especially if you're in the heat of competition, it's like, you know what? Take a chance. What's the worst that could happen? It's a competition that did that with one of my master's lifters last year. I believe he missed a second attempt clean and jerk. So we ended up moving him up on the third because it would have earned him, I think, a bronze medal in the clean and jerk. So I was like, let's do it. What's the worst that could happen? Yeah.
At that point, you already got a total.
Yeah,
so, that's might as well.
So, and it works. So, you got to just take it as it comes.
Definitely. Now,
the biggest thing I would add on to that, though, is that know your lifter. Whoever you're coaching, you have to really know them inside and out in terms of mentally how they operate in competition, how they operate in training, what they've done. So then that way you can make the best case judgment on them. And you really have to be able to not necessarily play, but just play off their personality to make the best decision for them.
Yeah. You have to have that personal relationship and you have to be able to read their body language too.
Oh yeah. Like
what you normally see, what they do in training and then how they're reacting to the situation at the meet. Like, okay, you never throw anything. You never throw your belt, but now you're throwing your belt. All right, that's a warning sign that we are about to go off the deep end.
Yeah.
are you a belt thrower?
I used to be. I've got a belt thrower. That's one of them. But yeah, I used to be. I've stopped with that and stopped throwing other things or destroying stuff because I'd be so angry and then just do something like that. Then afterwards, just be. Become like completely apathetic because they just realize the damage I've done or something. I was like,
weightlifting can bring a rage out of people that you've never seen.
Yeah. And people think I have like a temper or something like that. Or like, oh, I don't know. Like, no, it's only really only directed in weightlifting. There's nothing else that makes me this mad.
It's funny. So what drew you into coaching in the first place?
Well, I don't know. You know, it's like all these things just kind of emerge to a certain degree. I did enjoy enjoyed working with people and being able to like instruct weightlifting to them. I originally went to school for teaching and I was teaching in a school. I mean, I thought that's what I wanted to do at the time just because of the credits that I took and was trying to figure out what type of major. So yeah, it sounds kind of interesting. I started working in a school. So, I mean, some people say like, well, you're still teaching now. That kind of counts, but I don't really relate the two per se. especially in terms of wants and drive, because I just think it's just the situation of why I did that versus why I'm doing this. I think they're just different. But I know I've been just enjoyed being able to work with people and get them to do things, get the progress out of them. And it just kind of evolved, because like I said, I was working at a school too, and then I had a leave replacement. Then I was training people on the side for just income and such. And then just one summer just kept building up with it. And that's really, here I am now. Just everything kept growing and growing to this point.
And then you eventually bought all this equipment and opened the gym. And for anyone who's not, you know, familiar, check out Danny's Instagram or the Instagram for the New York Weightlifting Academy. It is the coolest gym. Like I've been there once, and it's an authentic weightlifting gym. It's not a CrossFit gym that does weightlifting. Like this would be that if I were ever to open up my own gym, I would want it to be like this. Like it is.
I appreciate that.
It is a weightlifting gym. So like check out the photos. It's awesome.
Yeah. I just, honestly, everything just collected over time. It was just like buying something, like whatever I could afford at the time, utilizing that, especially too. I think like the time period where I started getting involved in it was a good time period, because things weren't crazy expensive. It wasn't as popular as it is now. So able to find some used equipment and then want to buy some cheaper stuff, then eventually get something a little bit nicer, then sell this. And it was just kind of swapping and leveling up and knowing, let's say, oh, this guy told me that someone's selling a full Aleco set. Oh, really? How much you want for it? And then just things like that. People approaching me with equipment they want to sell. And it's just everything accumulated and collected. So as I grew in coaching with people, the equipment grew relative and just kind of worked it around. So it's I mean, if it was like a one-time investment, oh my God.
that'd be tough.
That would be impossible to do without a major loan or financial backing, or, I mean, yikes.
Now, I know you're pretty particular about your barbells. I listened to your podcast, yes. No Traps, No Glory.
Well, thank you.
And on that, you mentioned at the New York State Championships that we're going to be using Aleco bars or, and this was for the last year's.
Yeah.
So Aleco bars, or I think Yusaka or Worksan, what's the difference? Like a really nice Rogue bar. You know, I don't know the difference. We only have Rogue at the CrossFit gym. So I'm like, hey, this is a great bar. I love this bar. Mm-hmm. What's the difference?
Honestly, but which Rogue bar, like the Pyros bar, the Olympic bar, or which ones?
It's the competition bar, the Rogue HD competition thing.
Well, honestly, the Rogue bars are now and have become really good. Like they really are good. Like it's a nice bar. All the times I've lifted on them, I've got no complaints about it whatsoever. They've done a really good job of making it to an international standard, if you want to call it that. So, I mean, relative to an Aleco, they're very close. I'm sure if you just lifted blindly on them, you probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference. The Yusakas have a very different feel. Overall, a nice feel, but they're just different. They're not bearing bars, they're bushing, but they seem to really ascribe to that as being better and just incredibly well made. So, I mean, I really don't use Rogue stuff. I don't have any Rogue stuff just because I wanted to keep everything as like traditional weightlifting. And I just enjoy having that nostalgic look more so in terms of, let's say, like what weightlifting was to where it is now type of deal, and try to be able to maintain that as opposed to, let's say, Rogue. Because also too, I mean, very few gyms have a lot of Aleco, very few gyms have a lot of Yusaka equipment. And especially if I'm a strictly weightlifting gym, I mean, it kind of really, I think, sets it apart. Because Rogue, especially, obviously Rogue being domestic, shipping's a lot easier than getting any sort of Aleco or Yusaka stuff. So, I mean, Rogue is very prevalent. I mean, it's good equipment. It's easy to obtain. So you see it everywhere. And this, I think, differentiates me a little bit. And also, too, actually, most all the equipment I have, like just kind of looking around, minus a couple things, all the stuff I got used, they were secondhand, really. So, I mean, like good bargain hunting, good deal hunting. My friend Dave, who used to work at Aleco, he would always let me know when they were having, let's say, like deals come up or equipment that was used as a trade show that I could get for a really good deal. He'd like propose, hey, we're going to be down in DC and we got this equipment laying around. You're interested in getting some? And I'd get a get like a discount on that because of it being technically used, even though it's brand new. So it it just kind of worked out that way too, knowing the right people.
Yeah, and everything in your gym, it looks so well taken care of. So even if it is used or older, it doesn't really look it. If anything, it looks vintage. You know, like yeah. You said, like it looks authentic weightlifting, and that's probably what added to the whole feel and atmosphere of your gym.
Yeah, and that's a big part is having that atmosphere and having the environment cater to that. And actually, a bunch of the plates here too are also Mark's plates. Mark's got just a museum of and treasure trove of equipment that he's collected throughout the years. I mean, crazy stuff. The stuff that's you've probably never even seen before. Like, and that's even just it's scattered everywhere. He's got so many plates and so many different bars. Some of the plates.
I know you guys had those two machines in the back.
Yeah, the spot machines.
Yeah, those are pretty cool.
No one's ever seen those things. Like, what is that? And once they get used to them, like, man, this thing is awesome. It works your legs hard. So we get some novelties like that just because of just from him being around forever and having just the scope of years and collecting things, bringing that in, the things that you can't find anymore. So that's pretty cool. And it's nice to have that novelty. Not if you even call it a novelty, but it's nice to be able to have that. It's appreciated.
Yeah, when the world gets back to normal, people are going to have to make a pilgrimage out to the New York Weightlifting Academy and visit an authentic weightlifting gym.
Well, we'll have to plan a weekend. You and bring your team down. We'll all have a training session together, go out, get something to eat, and something like that. And
yeah, that'd be sick.
Gyms. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's a short enough drive, you know. I think a lot of people would have fun. So let's put that on the calendar along with
that'll be great.
The big meet. Now, with working with Mark, you know, no traps, no glory. I remember at the seminar that he taught, he was pretty big on talking about the traps. Can you kind of talk about where that phrase comes from and what the meaning behind it is and kind of the technique aspect of it?
Mm-hmm. Well, it essentially refers to the trapezius muscles, the muscles of the upper back. And if you've seen any weightlifter, especially male weightlifters with their shirt off, they look like they just look fierce and intimidating because their upper back is so well developed. And Mark's
they look like chiseled Greek statues.
Chiseled Greek statues of just beautiful hunk of muscle. Not however you want to go at it, but yeah. But Mark's premise behind that is that the traps are the fundamental point for all weightlifters because that is the point of the body where everything is really transferred through. So all of your energy, your ability to maintain positions, your ability to have a good acceleration in a pull, positions in a squat, everything is related to the traps because that area is where the force of the legs, force of the hips, force of the barbell is ultimately that's the transmission point for all of those components. So you need to have one flexibility in the upper back, but the traps need to be developed to be able to support your body maintaining positions, but also the load that's overhead, the load that's underneath. So like he says, a lot of people seemingly in this country don't pay a lot of attention to their development. And if you have proper technique and proper attention to that, then that's going to go a long way to making you a more powerful lifter, but also a more durable lifter.
Now does he recommend like doing a lot of shrugs, like barbell or dumbbell shrugs to develop them, you know, maybe from a muscular development?
Lots of rowing exercises. So between doing, let's say, just normal high pulls, lots of, let's just upright, like snatch Olympic rows, a lot of dumbbell rows on an incline or a board from various angles, just a lot of supplemental work. And I don't know if you can see, but like this type of motion and that type of
You know, I actually can't see you. I thought maybe your video wasn't working.
Oh, really?
yeah, your camera hasn't been on the whole time. Oh, I just thought that maybe your camera didn't work on your thing.
I don't think it does. Okay, never mind then.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think the camera, unfortunately, is working on this, so my apologies. But yeah, a lot of, if you can envision like upright rowing type of stuff, various inclines, it's snatch pulling, everything that's going to incorporate that type of motion of your elbow and shoulders elevating.
And that's typically an end of a training session type of thing. So like you're working out 3 days a week, Are you like doing a little bit of traps every day, or is that like a Wednesday type of thing, or day
just
two?
Do it based upon the workout. I mean, sometimes if you do a lot of pulling in one workout, you might want to give them a little bit of a break, so that way you can, actually do something the next session. But just really all supplemental work, as much as you can handle or feel that you want to do, and what your body can tolerate.
Cool. And with using the traps and having it be that, I feel like some people, like there's a misconception on using the traps.
Okay.
Is how does Mark and how do you propose to use the snatch during the lift? Like you're trying to use them to shrug down under the bar versus trying to shrug and pull the bar higher, correct?
In terms of, let's say, like how we instruct it, really?
Yeah.
Okay. When I do that, I don't necessarily instruct like an actual shrugging motion. Sometimes with a couple people, I've used that phrase or phrase it like that to get them to elicit it. But generally, how I do it is like a continuity of the pull and making sure how your extension is achieved and getting the bar to the certain positions at the right time in order for you to have the correct timing of the lift overall, which in turn is resultant of incorporating, let's say, a shoulder elevation or a shrug or something along those lines, if that makes sense.
So you're trying to get everything from point A to point B to be as seamless as possible throughout the full pull.
Correct.
And
so the biggest thing
and receiving.
Is, yeah, biggest thing for me in terms of how I instruct all lifts is continuity. You have to stay connected to the bar, and you want the bar to continue moving. And for me, it doesn't. If the bar has to get to certain points and has to maintain its momentum at certain points all throughout where it is, let's say relative to your body, in order for you to be able to have good timing to execute the lift smoothly. It doesn't matter how fast or how explosive or how wildly aggressive you are, because it doesn't matter. You could be brutally aggressive and just end up losing your timing points. And then as a result, you don't make the lift, or the lift is, you have problems in other areas. So for me, it's just, it's all position to timing, and timing will in turn ultimately bring your speed. So
now,
it's all tight.
Yeah. Now for a lifter who, you mentioned earlier, focusing on the traps is not really prevalent in a lot of gyms, across the country. So a lifter who isn't really focusing on developing the traps, and then in turn can't really use them efficiently in the lift.
Okay.
What kind of errors would you see from that person? Like, are they going to be more likely to cut their pull short? Are they going to be more likely to have an unstable catch position, kick the bar out? Like, what would be the errors that you would expect to see in someone who isn't paying attention?
Sure. Yeah. Something like that. I would say most likely you're always going to see the pull getting cut short, in my opinion, because you essentially the portion of the traps out, let's say you shrugging, your shoulders elevating, however you want to, let's say, really phrase it. That portion of the lift is, or it's a portion of continuity lift. Let's say it's akin to if you're running or jumping, the plantar flexion of your foot, equated to the same thing. When you run, when you jump, you don't try to force plantar flexion. You don't try to come up on your toes purposely, but because of the generation of force as it transfers down your leg, ends up just naturally causing that. It's the same thing in the lift, where the creation of force that you create throughout the pull, you should have that elevation in the top that leads into your shoulders, which is to a certain degree why I don't directly say that, because the more, for me, what I find, the more I try to keep things as broad and as dumb as possible, because the more acute you try to get with phrases, I mean, sometimes you have to, obviously, at some point in time when you're trying to go over like fine aspects of it, but the more acute you get, the more confusing you become, and I think to lifters, at least for me personally, I know how that's how a lot of my career has been with Mark, and took me different ways of how to interpret things, apply things. But
especially when they're trying to lift in the first place, like you're in the training session.
Exactly.
And it's like they have so many things that they're already thinking about, and now you're using a lot of technical terms, and they're like, I lost you. 2 minutes ago.
Precisely. That's exactly it. So, I mean, certain people can handle little things like that and make the changes. Other people can't handle small cues like that. So I try to just go from a more broader sense to achieve that, and even sometimes don't even say it directly. But again, going back to original, it's just you'll find the bar gets kicked away because that portion is a continuity of the extension of your legs, extension of your body. And if you're missing that, ultimately you're going to cut and the pull short in the top, and it's going to make it, bar is going to be out front or get hit away, and that's going to make it harder for the lifter to obviously receive it.
So they're going to have to take a couple steps back, do some accessory exercises, develop the strength and possibly the muscle growth of the traps, develop them well, and then also transfer that to their lifts with things like pulls.
Correct.
Like a pull with a shrug at the top, mm-hmm. a high pull, maybe eventually a panda pull or two.
Yeah, and like so too, depending on how their technique is in doing those exercises, how their technique of those exercises will in turn also help develop that. So if they have good technique, that's will develop their traps mainly, especially heavy pulling always will incorporate solid development. And then just the supplemental stuff just helps fortify it even more.
Yeah, I feel like, I know like in our training, you know, our training is probably maybe more biased in if it targets the traps at all.
Yeah.
From an isometric standpoint,
okay,
where we're doing heavy deadlifts and of course they're getting taxed, but like as opposed to like actually like shrugging up and down and doing the contractions and eccentric and concentric motions, I feel like that's probably something that I need to look into more.
Yeah, it's a good thing to do, and it helps reinforce good motion to where you just the bar is maintaining its ascent. And like I'll have people do them where, or I'll even do them myself, where I'm not worried about trying the speed of the pull or trying to be so violent with my extension in the top, but allow the bar to stay in motion. And let's say just as an example for myself, like when I push press, especially when it gets heavy in the push press, I can't think about being forceful. What I think about is just not letting the bar slow down. It doesn't have to be fast, but just don't let the bar stop moving. And like a lot of analogy I'll use with people for that too, when I'm trying to explain is that like, if you've pushed a car or a heavy sled or something like that, the hardest part of it is breaking the inertia. And then once you break the inertia of the dead object, it has momentum. And that's a 4,000 pound car. I mean, obviously that's a heavy object, but if you break the inertia and you get it moving, so long as you keep it moving, you can maintain its trajectory into wherever you're going with it. Now, let's say it stops. Now you're back at zero again. It's very hard to get a heavy object moving again and build momentum. And that's the same thing with the lifts. So
not only that, when you have to get it going again, you're already fatigued from the first effort when you got it moving again, and then you correct. Stopped. It almost reminds me of like if someone has a hitch or a stutter in their pull.
Exactly.
You know, you got it. You get it going, and then like just past the knees or you pull too long, it's in the hips. You mm-hmm. stop, and then you pull again. It's like, well, it's not going to go the way it was before.
That's exactly it, and that's a lot of people get into that habit because they think they have to put more force, more power. But again, going back to like originally saying with the like accessory exercise or stuff for that, just doing slow pulls where you don't worry about the height of the bar, you don't worry about the speed. You just allow the momentum to maintain as long as you can maintain into the position, and let's say do like a slight high pull or a shrug as a result of that, and that'll – work you very hard, but also technically instill keeping the bar moving all the way through.
Yeah, not everything has to be zero to max effort every single time
exactly.
you do it.
One of the best things I heard for in terms of lifting is that speed comes from position. So most people think that, okay, now the bar's in middle thigh. I got to explode like someone stuck a grenade up my butt or something like that. But it all comes from the position, especially with snatching, because snatching is just all leverage and leverage applied. So the harder you try to work the bar, the more you're going to stiffen up, the more you're going to prevent it from moving as it wants to based upon how your body's ascending and using your levers. So if the bar gets to the correct position, use your levers properly. Once it gets to that, same for the jerk, same for the clean, but a little different in terms of a duration that it's working. But once the bar gets to that point where your levers finally extend and give it that little bit of free motion, that's your window to move fast. And your fast is the transition. So like, again, I tell that to everyone too, is that the fastest part of every lift is not the effort, but it's the transition. When the bar is moving freely in the window of your window of opportunity to go down, that's when you move your quickest.
I like that, the window of opportunity. And
excuse me. Thank you.
A lot of people miss that window.
Yeah, very much. And like, let's say for me too, in my, I've always had a side just not being flexible. I've always, and I think one's relative to the next really, or to each other, but I've always had a lot of trouble with the jerk. And I think, let's say, because I wasn't flexible, because it was hard to achieve positions, because my elbows and shoulders, that I would work harder in ways where I shouldn't be working harder. So now, as a result, I got to try harder to get over my head, and I'm dipping faster, I'm dipping more wildly, trying to put more force, and that just compounded things and made it even worse. But now, as I learned that, just being patient to work at the right time. So I dip slowly, I come out of the dip, not necessarily explosively, but just a little bit more forcefully, and that allows me to maintain position, which then I can transition much better, and wow, lo and behold, this is actually a lot easier. This is what it's supposed to feel like.
Yeah, you're not sticking with any one part of a particular lift longer than you have to or less than you have to. Correct. It's the right amount so that the window is just lined up. It's like you're just lining up a shot, you know, every single time.
Yeah.
On whatever analogy you want to put, like a tennis swing. Like a tennis swing. You have a window of opportunity on a tennis. There's a right place to strike the ball when you're swinging and it's coming at you. But then you have to follow through the motion. But you also had to wind up for the motion as well. So there's a front and a back end and a middle, kind of like on all the lifts.
Yeah, exactly. Very well said. And that's one thing that's helpful for, let's say, other people transition to lifting from another sport, is that every sport is relative to one another, because it's all human motion. Human mechanics are obviously the same. So how we develop power, how things are supposed to be applied is really, for whether it be a tennis swing, golf swing, lifting, throwing a ball, it's all a matter of just the technique, so that way you exert the least amount of energy and get the most effective force relative to that. So understanding that goes a long way. So okay, I don't have to try to just uproot the earth and lift the bar. I have to pull a little bit slower, which is things that are counterintuitive, but ultimately yield much more success.
Yeah, and then when you watch the best in the world doing it, you know, when you watch their videos on YouTube, it starts to make more sense when you see what they're actually doing. Like, they're not trying to rip it off the floor, you know, very, you know, like too fast. You know, they're not trying to like hulk this weight overhead. They're very efficient, and everything is moving as it should be in relation to one another.
Exactly. And it's just like, oh, why did they make it look so easy? It's like, well, aside the years upon years of effort that they put into it, it's because they're applying themselves in the correct manner. It's like, it's just, and it goes to everything else in life too, where you can't force things. Things happen to happen in the right way, in the right space. So you just have to put yourself in the positions to be able to do that. It's like asking a girl, you can't just run up to a girl and be like, let's go out. You have to say hello first, introduce yourself.
Yeah, I was just thinking that it's like a relationship or starting a relationship. Everyone has their own personal relationship with their barbell and their lifts. Now, you mentioned earlier your jerk. Yes. Do you use the counterbalance technique that Mark taught way back at that biomechanics of the jerk seminar?
What was that for, the like when the bar flexes on you type of thing?
No, it was more of like the way he taught it. It was like there was like a lean forward. It was
yes.
So right now, everyone probably has no idea what I'm talking about. So let us know like what the counterbalance technique is. And Mark, I found a blog of his where he talked about it as well.
Oh yeah,
it's very interesting.
Yeah, what did it say?
It's somewhere out there where you get a sort of a forward lean of the torso. You start leaned forward by a few degrees instead of starting completely vertical.
Yeah,
and then you move the legs. And the legs are more of like a spring, like you're sitting into a spring, but that tilt forward helps you to propel the bar up and to use force a little bit more efficiently than to staying completely vertical and upright and sitting straight down and coming up.
Okay. I don't know. I'm probably going to sound like I'm going to differ on this. And he's always been on my case about this for years, but honestly, like What I do, I just think of front squatting. I just dip like I would front squat. And he'd always be like, you got to sit back more. But every time I would do that, it would be be horrible. I'd throw the bar away. My position would be off. My pelvis would shift every which way.
I feel the same way. And I tell my lifters, if we front squat one way,
yeah,
but then we dip another way, what use was the front squat to help the jerk at all? Like if you're using your muscles in two different ways, like you dip and your hips shift forward, mm-hmm. but they don't move and you don't sit into it like you do the front squat,
yeah.
then your front, it doesn't matter how heavy you got your front squat, you're not using the muscles the same way when you're doing the jerk. Of course, it might help with the clean a little bit, but
yeah.
I'd like it to help both.
Well, so my interpretation and let's say over time understanding of this is he still gets on my case about it, but I keep it like a front squat. And I think ultimately, really what he's getting at, let's say from a mechanical position, is that as your hips go back, and if let's say you have like that slight lean, like he's saying, it allows it's mechanically more advantageous for your legs to be able to generate force and apply force. Now, the discrepancy where that I think comes from that is that just I don't have the flexibility in my upper back to be able to maintain that type of angulature with my body to be able to maintain that. So essentially I dip like a front squat because that's all that my range of motion affords me to do, which is the angle that basically the angle that it puts me at. So this is the front squat. That's how I train the front squat. And that's how I dip for it. And let's say like leaning forward like that, I've always had a ton of trouble with it when he would say that. And I mean, if I just make it doing a squat, that's where I have the most success. Whether I'm right or wrong, I don't know, but I mean, that's seemingly where I've been the most consistent with it. And then
maybe someday I can get Mark on the podcast here and we'll talk about it.
Oh, for sure. I'll get my screen open too.
Yeah. I know when I tried it at the seminar, it did feel way different. I felt faster. I was like, whoa, all right, that's probably what a jerk is supposed to feel like. And then if this makes sense, when you watch the pros do a jerk and you're like, whoa, like that doesn't look like what I do. Like they just like dip and then they slide under the bar. I felt I could do that when I was doing that counterbalance technique, but also I wasn't willing at the time, typical athlete, to take weight off the bar in my training mm-hmm. and have to retrain my jerk essentially from the start. Cause I wasn't going to be able to do it with the weights that I was lifting on the maximal end. And thinking long-term again, had I done that, maybe my jerk would have been even better because I do have the flexibility to hold that position. Okay. Maybe it would have been better eventually mm-hmm. had I been willing to not go as heavy on the jerk in regular training and stick to my normal technique. So that's just, there you go, typical athlete stubbornness. You know, it's a
stubbornness. But also, I mean, it's I don't know. Like, let's say, like, obviously, I've been training with him for my entire career, really. And I'll tell you more than anyone else, he's beat me down. And jerks workout after. I mean, there was probably two separate periods where every workout, I jerked every workout for a month straight. I mean, it nearly killed me in the process. Like, so he has not taken lightly to not trying to get my jerk better. But every time, I mean, I'd try to sit back or like, he'd even like, oh, come here and set boxes up, try to teach me what he wants me to do. It would just be so unnaturally uncomfortable and awkward with terrible result. It's like, I don't know. I mean, can't say that the guy's wrong. It's just I don't think that I'm physically able to do what he wants me to do for whatever the reason may be. Or at least, I mean, maybe I could do it, but I'm not going to be jerking more than 90 kilos as a result.
Yeah. And I know when I tried to teach it to my athletes, they were kind of looking at me like, all right, you're crazy. Like you went to a seminar and here you are again, popping in with like crazy things that you want to try. And no one can do it and no one understands it because we already spent so much time doing it the other way. And now it's like, it's difficult to get, you know, a whole class. And then I'm also second guessing myself. I'm like, well, I'm not Mark Chasnov. So like, I don't even know if I'm teaching this correctly. Like, you know, you should put out a video, like an instructional video on it or something.
Yeah, no, he definitely could. One thing I was going to say to that I've learned over time is, which maybe helps lend to this or to performing it. Maybe I'm doing it better now and I don't realize, but I mean, just like we think about when you get set up for a clean and when you catch a clean before you even start, your back is very tight and you're making emphasis to keep your back and chest really tight. So I think when you catch the clean, you're already in a stilled position. So now let's say if you're going to do a jerk from the rack or something, I always try to really emphasize having the posture and position that I would before I even pick the bar up, as opposed to just picking it up. I'm approaching the bar already with the intention of how I want my posture to be, so that way I can maximize what my positioning is going to be. And it's just like setting up in the start of a lift. It's all throughout. And the tighter and more uncomfortable I am trying to keep my chest up and almost essentially what he's saying, I guess, counterbalancing, where I'm arching my back really as tight as I possibly can to where my butt is almost sticking back a little bit and my chest is almost coming up a little bit out, that locks my torso in a much better position than I think I'm able to dip better into that. So that's kind of how I focus on it. So whether maybe I am doing it and that's why he hasn't yelled at me or what, but but you know, I think that's a good way of communicating. Because let's say when I had Klokov here, and he did a seminar, the biggest thing that he did, especially with everything, was how solid and tight your back was. And like, he was just like, if most people are way too, like I tell all the time, if you're comfortable in a starting position, then you're not in the right position. You have to be, when you're holding a position in the start of a lift, or even let's say in start for a jerk, it's got to almost be more uncomfortable for how tight you're positioning yourself than it is for what the actual weight is. Because if you're that uncomfortable getting yourself set, then you know you're putting that much energy into making sure that you maintain the proper posture that you need.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing that you bring up. I imagine, and I know for myself, most lifters probably lean towards the side of comfort versus discomfort. You know, you go to set up on the bar and you're kind of loose. Yes. You know, you sit down there, you get things set, and then you kind of eventually tighten up and then pull. But there's timing on that too. So maybe you didn't get all the way tight and you pulled early. Now your upper back's loose, or your mid back, or who knows what.
Yeah, no, it's true. And that's evidenced in for a lot of the initial pull of the bar. If you hear the bar rattle as it comes off the floor, or if someone's chest drops, those are all suffered consequences of that.
Yeah, I try to tell my athletes to, you're taking the slack out of the bar, but you're also taking the slack out of you.
Yes,
so you're using the bar in conjunction with your own body to load everything. And I'm trying to load my skeleton. I'm trying to load deep within. And then when I move, the bar moves. It's like that song, "When I Move, You Move." You know, I don't always think that. But that's how I like to think about it.
I like that. I think that's a really good way to do that. Because, you're loading your whole – I mean, it's all potential energy that you're creating by doing that. So, once you do that and get set, I mean, it's just like preparation is everything in life. So whether you're painting a room, whether you're baking a cake, it's the final product is – a good final product, it all comes in the preparation. And the more time and more deliberate you are getting set up, the easier the lift is going to be. And most likely as a result, the better the lift's going to be.
Yeah. And I went to a Klokov seminar when he came up here up into the Capital District. And when he taught the jerk, it was very similar to that counterbalance technique.
Yes.
Sitting into it, you know, he had my heels touching. My heels were touching and my toes were all the way out. And I'm sitting down, like, I'm like, do you want me to do a thruster? This is a jerk. Like, I'm at parallel. He's like, that's the dip. Like, you need to dip down that low. And my thighs were on fire with just an empty barbell. He makes you hold positions for the, that's it. He destroys people. You hold positions for 5 minutes until he's ready for you to go. And then you go. And it's like max effort lift from the bar. And it's like, I'm like, that's nowhere near as deep as I dip, but maybe I should work on that too.
And that's the thing, that's Mark's premise. If you're employing your legs, making sure your dip is deep enough, correct enough, so that way you actually can apply the strength that you have, as opposed to, like, you see a lot of people, they do a very quick, shallow, abrupt dip, and usually that results in someone staggering all over the platform. So
and you see the professionals do it,
yes,
but they're one, they're professionals too, they're trying to use the whip on the bar, right?
Correct. They're lifting weights that we're never going to touch in our lifetime, really, unfortunately. So, I mean, it's just, there's a whole different physical aspect to do with that, because the weight of the bar is so much exponentially higher that the mechanics of the bar itself are different. They're able to capitalize off of that.
Yeah, it's amazing. I remember at the Klokov seminar, he was like, "You Americans, your problem is you're not strong."
Yeah.
He goes, your quads, they are so weak.
Yeah.
Your hamstrings, they are very weak. They're so weak. Your glutes, you have no butt. You have no glutes." And then he talked about being able to use all three of those those portions of your,
yes,
your lower body to do the lifts and whatnot. And then over the course of that weekend of getting instruction for him, when he's holding you positions, you're like, yeah, you're right. I have no stamina or strength in my quads.
I am worthless in your presence.
yeah. Just gonna quit now. He rolled in. I think they just picked him up from the airport, and he rolled in just wearing his weightlifting shoes already. He was just rolled in. It was great.
That guy's a trip, man. I tell you, one of the seminars I did, I picked him up from the airport down JFK. He came directly from Australia. Picked him up. Yeah, directly from Australia. Picked him up, stopped at the grocery store, got some food, dropped him off at his hotel. I guess like a half hour later, he promised a couple friends of his, like Vasily and the guys in the city, that he would train with him. They picked him up a half hour later from the hotel, drove back down to the city from Westchester. He trained with them, and then they dropped him off again. Well, obviously they dropped him off. And then pick him up for the seminar the next day. I'm like, dude, how do you do this? If I go to bed like an hour later, I end up with I get sick. I end up with like a sinus infection. You flew all the way from Australia, trained, and you're still doing this? Like, how's this even possible? The guy was like superhuman.
Yeah, he is a superhuman. This is great. I highly recommend anyone who gets a chance take a Klokov seminar. You have met the gym pretty regularly, right?
Was it last year or 2 years ago? Yeah, we did two seminars with him. So that's really all we've done so far. I think a lot of the seminar wagons are dying down a little bit. It seems like everybody's doing them, or like people just don't have interest in taking seminars. I would like to do Tarakti. I think he's got a lot of really good information. So I would like to have him at some point, but for now, we just got to get back operating.
Yeah, right now everyone's online. Well, hey, if you ever get Tarakti to the gym, let me know. I would definitely get a bunch of people, and we'll come down and do a day of weightlifting and learn from him.
Absolutely. Yeah, he seems like, I mean, his content is great. All of his information is great. It seems like he's got a lot of detail and explanation. So I'd be curious to have him in and see what you can get from him. I'm sure it's a lot. It seems very well thought out.
I've never been to a seminar that I regretted. I always walked away with at least one nugget. And if you can do that, it was worth the price of admission.
You know, honestly, you can learn from everybody. Like I was telling someone, actually last week it was, that every national event that I've gone to, I've always come away from it learning something. And it's awesome because it's always like not even national events, just like every time I've traveled for weightlifting, I'll put it in that way. I've come away with something. You can learn from everybody. You can learn from anybody. The way someone may say something, it just clicks differently. The way you might see something might click differently. So it's very fortuitous to be able to do something like that.
Yeah. Even people who've been in the sport for a little while can learn from like the brand new beginner, because they might ask you a question and you might be like, whoa, no one's ever asked me that before. I've never had to think about that before. Normally we just do it normally, you know. Why does the clock work that way? You know, like you don't think about it, you just kind of live it, and it's different.
I like that. Yeah, no, it's true. It's, I mean, you can, and it goes for every aspect of life. That's why you can't be stubborn and thick-headed and think that one way is the best way over the next, because many people have achieved many great things doing it in many different ways. So you got to be open to everything. Plus it's a lot less stressful to be like that.
yeah. Just gotta be an open book. You gotta be open. You gotta be an open book that other people can read from, and also other people can write in.
Ooh, yeah, that's, I like that. Yeah, I like that a lot. That's a good one.
Now, you have a big meet coming up here in October. Hopefully,
the world gets back to normal. Hopefully, so. I would think October is far enough out to where we can actually have this happen uninterrupted and have.
I hope so. When I saw you announced it, I posted in the private Facebook group for my barbell club, and I posted a picture of the team banner.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want that.
Nice.
You all need to, you like training starts right now. Like you are preparing for that. I want you thinking about that meet. I want you doing everything you can. This is the goal we're putting on the calendar, because we need something to train for. We were going to do a mock meet yesterday. It would have been yesterday. And we were going to do a meet in Auburn at Swagglers. It was going to be early May. And that's probably not going to happen now, but you know, and probably some meets over the summer. But I'm like, all right, this is hopefully a definite. It's far enough out. Everything you eat, every minute of sleep you get, all the stretches you do, everything is building up to that. And I'm like, I want that. We are going to roll in and we are going to be ready for a fight, you know?
That's so awesome. That's
what we're looking for, you know?
Yeah.
Cause I love the team aspect. Like we do so many meets and it's like, it's always individual, which is great.
Yeah.
But if you bring a squad, I'm like, I dream for weightlifting to be more team oriented,
mm-hmm.
you know, where like every meet has a team aspect. Like you got your four guys or four ladies or whatever. Cause I think that'd be super cool to have more meets that do that. So I really like that aspect about championships.
I've actually did not to get on a side tangent here, but, kind of thought of a way that might be really cool for us to create like a team league in the state, somewhat similar to how Germany has the Bundesliga. So that way it's everybody's handicapped. So it's not like it's all team oriented. So an easy way for everyone to, let's say like we have inter-gym training, people compete, like we lift together all at the same time. It's kind of like a normal training session, but we just kind of, we count people's lifts and score points off of it, so that way you don't have to have like a proper meet format and take the time to set up the warm-ups and do all the stuff. You could do it with limited space and just create a fun inter-team training environment. We can make it competitive and have people do around, because it's exactly that. It makes the more oriented you could have people on a team, especially because there's only going to be a couple winners per class. So you're going to have those who obviously, you could say, yes, weightlifting's competing against yourself, but here's an aspect where everybody can contribute to the performance of the team, regardless of their level, regardless of their ability. So it gives everyone an equal shot to represent something. So I think that I'll have to try to come up a little bit more, like talk to more people and see how we can round this up. But I got a cool idea that's still in
front. No, I love that. Like I'm down, because I mean, it's like you just said, you have people who they're new to the sport or they're not lifting the biggest weights and they're like, all right, you know, oh, you don't have to come and watch my lifts. You know, like you can come and watch, you know, the person on the team who's doing the big lifts and things. It's like everybody's important. And if it's a more team oriented sport, then everyone can feel like they're contributing. And
yes.
I feel like that to me seems like it would get more people to do meets versus having it be just solo. And there's only those people who going in, you pretty much know how it's going to rack up at the end, you know, given some, maybe some stakes. I think it'd be definitely a lot more fun. I'm in.
Yeah, cool. All right, I'll send you some details on what I was thinking about that and how we'll do it. I think it'd be a real simple, easy way, and it's fun. Get people together, have fun, not worry about meets being so strict and stressful. So,
Weightlifting should be fun. It should be fun first. Be fun first.
And you know, and kind of going into where you were saying about state championships, is that premise behind this is that for the most part, I mean, most people involved in weightlifting, I mean, the majority of people are average people who enjoy doing it because they love doing it. Those are the people that really keep weightlifting moving, keep the federation afloat, keep national events afloat to a certain degree. I mean, look at the American Open Series. It's basically all normal people doing a local meet, really, in a national level type of format or setup. So those are the ones that are the drivers, and that's obviously the financial driver in many ways for the USA weightlifting and such. So, I mean, it's the more you can bring a meet that's going to cater in competitions that cater towards everybody instead of worrying about everyone, who's the next CJ Cummings, which, you know, and people like them that are in the top of the country, they're out there somewhere. Where they're going to be found, who knows, but, you know, they're one per every 2 million, let's say. But that means there's about 2 million people that are not, that are still involved. So how can you do more to help them and their involvement, make their involvement more worthwhile? Because you want to keep the sport growing, keep people in it. Because, I mean, really, I mean, I think one good thing the quarantine is showing us is that no one's special in any which way, shape, or form, especially when it comes to life and death. And this is stopping everybody, and regardless of what your financial position is, celebrity position, anything like that. So we're all on the same page. Might as well just lay back a little bit and just enjoy things and make it easier for people to enjoy things. So
yeah, less barriers to entry, more fun, you know?
That's exactly it. So we get team.
Everybody's important, you know, more community,
mm-hmm.
you know, as opposed to just a few select. you know, kind of getting all the love.
That's exactly it. And like when I started state championships last year, or continued it, however you want to phrase it, I wanted to just, but one, there was a lot of unknown, didn't know what to expect, what was going to happen, but just wanted to get it going and incorporate as many people as possible and get everybody together, because New York seems like, out of all the weightlifting states and people I've talked to, the most just separatist type of groups amongst people. These people don't like that one. This one doesn't like that one. I don't like you because of this reason. It's just like, oh my God. It's like I've said many times to people, it's like, listen, weightlifting is a small sport that nobody cares about. Why would you fight against each other? That's only going to make it even more complicated.
Yeah, especially, we only have each other.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's like, it's such a nuanced little sport, and yet there's so much conflict between people. It's like, you know, just let it go. You got to.
Is that why there hadn't been for many years before last year a bless you. Is that why there hadn't been a New York State Championships? Because of all the bad blood? I mean, I know other states have it like every year.
Yeah, they do every year. I really don't know what the reasoning is. I just kind of said, you know what, I'm going to do it, and just did it without even really thinking through.
Well, I love how you did it. So it's like, all right, before there's, you know, like there's a gap, you know, who knows when the last one was. I don't know. I don't know if you know.
Yeah.
But then
Solomon did one like probably about a decade ago, or maybe a little longer.
Oh, 2013 maybe?
Didn't he do it? Yeah, I think he did it around then. Yeah, something.
Okay, like. That was my first weightlifting meet.
If that was it.
So that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that was the last one. So that's 2013 and 2019. You decide you're gonna bring it back.
Yeah.
And of course, everyone's mad, but none of those people who are mad were doing anything before. Like, you weren't gonna do a meet. You weren't gonna invest financially and take your time to run this event and try to do something for people. So why complain about it? You know, like, just like, why not support it?
Yeah, that was at least my thought on it. I mean, definitely got a lot of flack on it by some. And I mean, definitely got a lot of support too out of it. But like I said to many people, at least my intention was, I mean, actually, I'll say last year, how it ended up finishing up and what it became, it like far exceeded any expectation that I initially had for it. I thought, you know, let's just get the name out there, start it this year. It'll probably just be no bigger than a local meet. And then next year, then we could look into amping it up and making it a little bit bigger. Just, you know, just get it going, get people recognized with it. But then last year, just it took off. So that was really cool to see.
I like your idea that you're going to jump it around from gym to gym or club to club, right?
Yeah, that's it. Because that's how it should be. I mean, if it was down here every year, people are going to, I mean, I presume, let's just say, like, even if it was off, it was in Buffalo every year, I'd be like, oh, I'm not going to Buffalo every year, forget that. But you want to make it, I mean, you want to be like it should be, a state championship. It's like a mini national meet, obviously per the state, as nationals move around every year, and this should move around every year. Give a chance to different people to host it, different areas, different regions, make it convenient for them, draw different people. And that's, I think, a good way to bring everyone together. New York's a huge state. And most people, I don't think, realize the scope of how large New York is. It's funny, like if I see people in the city and say I'm from Westchester, like, oh, you're from upstate. I'm like, I don't consider this upstate at all. Like, drive 3 hours north of where I'm from, then you could start considering that upstate. That's like real upstate New York. I'm still, anything below Albany is questionable if you want to consider it upstate.
It kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you're a fan, Game of Thrones, where,
I've never watched it actually.
There's a whole country, and in the North, quote, they're like, oh, well, we're from the North, you know?
Yes.
And then when you go up further North, they're like, this is the real North, you know, up by the wall and all that stuff. And so it's like, that's what it reminds me of. It's like, yeah, no, it's not exactly really upstate or downstate.
So I'm
it's
sure
just
you
about
get
wherever
that.
You're at. Yeah, yeah, we get that.
So,
New York State Championships 2020, mm-hmm. October 17th and 18th.
Correct.
It's going to be at in Auburn, because you're partnering up with Swaggler Barbell Club. Shout out to those guys, Jamie.
Yeah, Jamie Swagger, he won the bid for it, so he's going to be hosting, organizing, do all that stuff. We've been helping him out a little bit, and I'm looking forward to it. I think it'll be a great time. It'll be cool to have it up there. Auburn's a nice place, so. I mean,
we go out there once or twice a year for his meet.
Cool. That's great. He's a really nice guy. So it's been great talking to him and everything. I think he'll do a really good job.
How does the gym put in a bid to get to host it?
The Metropolitan Committee, I believe they emailed. I go figure. I actually didn't get the email. I get my one of my master's lifters forwarded me the email. I don't know why. Probably my email settings, whatever that may be. But anyway, I believe the Metropolitan Committee emails everybody within the LWC. So you have access to that information. Or I'm sure on the Metropolitan website, they have a link to it as well.
Awesome. I'm going to have to check that out. I've got to get Albany CrossFit in the running there for maybe next year.
Yeah, why not? I mean, you could. And I mean, they have a whole checklist of things that you agree to and all that. So I guess you just meet those requirements and they select where it's good to be held. And so I'm glad they chose Auburn, because I think that's shows good faith to people upstate. And I mean, if it was close in Westchester or even somewhere around the Hudson Valley, again, I think it'd be a little bit unfair to other people. So Auburn's a good spot.
Yeah, it's pretty central. That's about a 2.5 hour drive for me.
Okay.
And then for you, that's got to be like what, like 3-4 hours?
Yeah, I think it's like just that 4 hours or so.
And that'll be pretty similar to someone coming from like the Buffalo type area. So not too bad. That's a good spot.
Not bad at all. So I mean, especially if you make a weekend of it, take the time to spend, like, you know, get a hotel or get an Airbnb and stay out there for a few days and just kind of chill out, no rush. That'll be nice. Driving upstate's always not, at least for me, I think driving up north is always nice and easy. It's smooth.
Compared to the city type.
And the city or the bridges or Jersey, it's just like, oh, there's a mess. Upstate's a pleasure.
Hey, you throw on a podcast like this one, The Barbell Strikes Back. And that cuts down your time right there. You're entertained. You learn a couple things. And before you know it, it's time to lift.
I like your style. See, man, you're a good salesman. You're right, though.
Selling the podcast.
Yeah, no, especially listen to a couple of them. Time goes real fast.
Yeah, so Casey, we're going to have to – or Danny, we're going to have to get you back on.
I'd love to. Anytime you want. I got to get you on mine now.
Yeah. Well, we'll just bounce back and forth, especially leading up to the meet. We'll yell at people to sign up. I know I'm already, like, you see all these gray hairs. This is from trying to get weightlifters to sign up for weightlifting meets in a timely manner, you know.
Yeah.
Like not the day before the registration closes.
I don't know. It's like, just do it.
It's like, we already know you're going to do it. So anyone listening, if you are in New York State, you should do this meet. It's the state championships. It's not that bad of a drive, like we just said. And what else are you going to do? You're training already, you know?
Just to sell that point a little bit more, there's no event. I mean, a national event costs a lot more in every way. Entry's a lot more, travel's a lot more, lodging is probably going to be a lot more. Upstate Auburn, the hotel in Auburn, I think that the meet's at, is the prices are incredible.
Did the Arnold, and that was like an arm and a leg.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, price-wise, you can't beat it. And, I mean, there's nowhere – I don't think you get this anywhere in the country, maybe outside other national meets or so, or, I mean, state championships, is it prize money. Top prize money for men, women, team. I believe masters are also getting prize money this year too. So, it's just like –
that's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, you can't – how can you beat that? You really – I don't think there's a better sell.
No, you can't. And you know what? You also can't be New York State champion if you don't get off your butt.
Ah, you're right.
So it's another important thing.
State champion, that goes a long way. And see, you know, that's a good title to have, because, I mean, you know, everyone looks at the national titles, but a state title, that says a lot right there, and it gives a lot of people an opportunity.
Yeah, there's a lot of other states where it's a prestigious title. Mm-hmm. And it's been unfortunate that in New York State for so long – we haven't had the opportunities for athletes claim that title, to train for it, and then for people to put that on their resume, you know. And even coaches, like, all right, your athlete wins. All right, well, you trained a New York State champion.
I believe Texas State Championships is the third largest competition in the country.
I wouldn't doubt it with Texas.
Yeah, no, I believe that's the second or third largest. I mean, obviously, Nationals and American Open, but I'm pretty sure Texas State Championships is the third largest competition. And I spoke to the Bobby Circus down there. I spoke to him a couple times about it at, like, last year, asking how he went about everything. And, you know, they do a great job. That's like that's a huge, prestigious meet. I believe they've had somewhere around like 400 lifters or something wild.
Wow. Everything's always bigger in Texas. But you know what? New Yorkers are competitive. I think we can beat them. Maybe
Absolutely.
not this
So
year, but you know what? Like we're up and coming
next
and
few
we're
years, why
fighters.
not? I
We're
mean, we
scrappy.
got the size, we got the population. Why can't we do it?
Yeah, let's get 500 lifters at Albany CrossFit
Oof.
over the course of several days
That'd be
to New
awesome.
York
That
City.
that's the only way to run it then. Then it'd be like a full week national meet type of thing.
Yeah,
That'd be
that we'll
cool
have
though.
food vendors, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Baby
Oh.
steps, though. First, Auburn, sign
Yeah.
up. Danny, how do they sign up? Where do they register? Just on USA Weightlifting?
I'm not sure as of yet. Jamie's handling all that. I spoke to him a few days ago. I believe he's getting it set up on Eventbrite, so it may not be on USA Weightlifting. I believe he did mention that. That's what I did last year.
Okay,
So
cool.
there hasn't been any official announcement as of yet, but we'll be put up on the NYS Championships Instagram, as well as we'll just be putting the word out there when everything gets finalized on it. But hopefully within the next few weeks, we'll have everything up and everyone know all the details and hopefully be able to make plans for an event that will happen in October.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited. We're training hard right now for it. That's our goal, you know, out there on the calendar. So I really hope it gets to happen. And if not, you know, if the world doesn't change, then maybe it'll just get bumped back a little bit later, like November or something.
That's
Either way,
awesome.
it's gonna happen. Like we're gonna do it.
Yeah,
So I'm
everything
excited.
will happen. Everything's going to come. It's just a matter of when. So we just got to wait it out, train hard, and I think October will be plenty time away to get everything back to normal.
Awesome. Well, once we have that information, I'll share it on the podcast, Instagram, and I'll share it all over because like I want people to go. You know, like you we also have to support local meets. We have to support meets in New York State if we want this thing to grow. So
Absolutely.
it's everybody's responsibility. It's every athlete's responsibility. It's every coach's responsibility. It's not just the person who decided to put on the meet.
Yeah, you know, that's actually like last year, that's what I took on. It was like my responsibility to deliver a good product and to that everybody, to where everybody want to be involved. And a lot of credit given to all the coaches that help support, like my buddy Bryant at Griffin Strength and Chris Smith from Long Island, Kurt Roderick down in Murder at Grows, all those guys, they put in a good effort and they showed a lot of support. And I was really appreciative to that. I mean, there's tons of other coaches. I mean, nonetheless, to just name them alone. I mean, Steve Swistak, good buddy of mine. So there are plenty of people really stepped up and were more than willing to help and be involved. So I probably should have started naming names. Now all of a sudden everyone's going, why'd you mention me? What about me?
Yeah, if anyone's listened to this far so far into the show,
Yeah,
but it's all about community. So you know
really is.
we have to make the New York State community stronger, you
I
know, and
agree.
better.
I agree. And that's, I think this is a good way to do it. And like we'll talk about doing a team league too.
Awesome. Well, Danny, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Where can people follow everything? Like, how can they follow you? How can they
Sure.
follow the championships? Plug all of your stuff.
Oh, cool. You're the man. So anyway, let's say Instagram's the biggest, first and foremost, the biggest, I'd say. So you can follow NY underscore weightlifting underscore academy for the gym. Myself, Danny underscore Casey. New York State Championships is NY underscore championships. And then just Facebook, just look up Danny Casey, look up New York Championships. It's where you can find all that. We have a YouTube page for New York Weightlifting Academy. Post a lot of the podcasts on there. And also No Traps, No Glories, our podcast, and can be found on SoundCloud as well. And what else? Yeah, I think that's all I got.
Yeah,
So,
that's quite a bit. Yeah, that's a
yeah.
lot of channels that you gotta maintain. Well, awesome. Thank you again for coming on, and everyone, be sure to follow all of those pages. You know, I follow all of them. There's a lot of great information on the YouTube channel as well. You know, there's a lot of technique things on there, on the Instagram as well. So if you're interested, I know there was a series on the pull at one point. So definitely check that out. Very educational. Make sure you follow if you're not already. The Barbell Strikes Back on Instagram. I'm in the
I gotta
process of
follow
making a
that. I didn't
fan.
realize you. I didn't realize you
Oh
had
yeah.
a separate page for that. I gotta make sure I get
Oh
on that.
yeah. I got separate everything. Wait till you see it. Like I'm gonna make a whole Star Wars crawl for you and everything.
Oh, really?
Because
Cool. All
yeah,
right.
because
Yeah,
the Empire Strikes Back, the Barbell Strikes Back. It's a
that's great.
thing. So make sure you guys follow that if you're not already. Follow James A. McDermott on Instagram, and I'm in the process of making a fan page for the barbell or for the. Barbell Strikes Back as well. So that's coming soon, little by
Awesome.
little.
Yeah, and I guess I really appreciate you having me on. It's been a pleasure. I look forward to doing it again.
Yeah, let's do it again really soon. Thank you.
Sure. We got the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We're on lockdown.
So excellent. That'll be great.